to the 1-2-3 show. Judd Boaz here. How you doing? I am joined by two very funny, very, you know, inspiring blokes. Nick and Lawrence. I almost forgot Lawrence Cribble. Nick Codrington cycled all the way from London to Hong Kong. How you guys doing?
Very well, thanks, Judd. We're just recovering in a moment.
Now, you guys cycled to raise money for cancer awareness, for cancer charity. And how much have you guys raised so far?
We're currently on £14,775 without the gift aid, which is £250 short of our target of £15,000 we're raising for Prostate Cancer UK.
Which is really incredible. You guys talked about you cycled 262 days, I said, all the way to get here. I'm going to probably start off with a question that my mum would ask me if I told her I'm going to cycle from London to Hong Kong, which is, are you guys crazy?
You're not the first person to ask.
That's probably the first question people ask. The second question is, do you love bicycles? And the answer to both of those questions is no.
No, really. So, let's get this started. What possessed you to do this?
I am Song Shilin.
Well, basically, we both had a bit of time. We've just graduated from university, and we wanted
people,
to travel.
When most people have a bit of time, they go down to the pub, you know, maybe watch a football. You decide you wanted to travel, and extremely travel.
Well, we wanted to do a big overland trip because we've got this 10 month period. So we thought, well, we could take a plane and go and chill out somewhere for a while, but it'd be more fun. You'd see the places in between if you set out from London and then do a big overland journey. We sort of sat in I think it was Lawrence's room with the Google Maps open and just, planned out how far we could possibly get and, ended up looking like Hong Kong. And we thought, you know, should we do it? And we said, yeah, why not give it a go? And it's also a huge opportunity to raise some money for a good cause. If you've got that amount of time and setting yourself that challenge, there was a whole aspect of raising money for Prostate Cancer UK. Originally, we wanted to raise £1 for every kilometre we cycled. So we thought we'd cycle 15,000 kilometres. So our original target was £15,000. We've ended up, we took a bit of a diversion. We went up some mountains and some deserts, so we hadn't really planned. So we cycled a total of 17,298 kilometres. So that's the kind of running total for donations would be amazing to get to that figure.
That would be incredible. So talk to me a little bit about the countries you went through. So you started off in England. Tell us about the journey itself.
So we went through 20 countries in total. We went through Europe, Central Asia and China. And our list of countries to rattle them off is England, France, Belgium, Holland, Germany, Austria, Hungary, Slovakia,
Serbia,
Bulgaria, Romania, Turkey, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, China.
Well done.
Were there any stands you didn't ride through? Is probably the question.
Turkmenistan
and Pakistan.
Oh, man. Which are two of the best stands.
we actually were meant to go to Turkmenistan, but we had some visa issues. They delayed our visa and we didn't have time to pick it up. So we had to divert.
Yeah, the diversion was quite painful because it meant you had to cross the Kizilkum Desert in its entirety. So we, instead of just nipping across the kind of the middle of it, we had to do 1,600 kilometers of desert, which we hadn't planned for. Hence the extra mileage.
I bet you would have been chirpy during that, hearing you're going to have to go through a desert. Let's talk about that. I mean, if you're 100 days into the journey of this, you know, almost 300-day journey, was there ever a moment where you said, this is, let's get on a plane and head home?
There are a few times when we cycle through or pass some cities and we thought, yeah, there's a direct plane from London to Munich, there's a direct plane from London to Istanbul. That would have been faster. coming into Hong Kong, we saw the signs for the airport and went, yeah, could have done that. But, no, to be able to see everything in between the airports was, like, fantastic. To see all the countries, all the cities, all the people on the ground, is an amazing way to travel, and we'd recommend it to anyone, whether you're going to do it for a week or you're going to do it for a year. Anywhere in the world, basically, we'd say cycling through all these countries is really, really amazing to see these kind of people and the areas.
But we're not pro cyclists at all. Like, when we set out, we couldn't really change a flat tire, let alone changing a chain or anything like that. So we had basically no knowledge.
So why bikes then, if you had no knowledge?
Well, we thought, okay, I said we had no knowledge. I was kind of lying. We had done a 1 week trip, in Asia before. We took a fast train down south from Beijing, to Hunan province and then, biked back. It was an amazing experience. We set out with a backpack and a bicycle and, crossed through some of the Chinese countryside. We're invited to, I think, two weddings, a birthday party and a funeral. But the funeral was a very happy event, I might have to add. It was very clapping and drums and
salsa dancing.
We just thought it was an amazing way to see places. Like, really, really cool that you wouldn't otherwise be able to see.
All
so.
Sorry, also, why cycling? Well, we thought walking's a bit slow. Running's too tiring, and then neither of us was broken.
Yeah.
we were actually told in Munich, when we thought that maybe the bikes wouldn't make it, one guy said, well, you could get to Hong Kong on a pogo stick.
It'll just take you longer.
So you said you didn't even know, I mean, how to change a flat tire, really. What did you do when you encountered a problem in the middle of the desert, maybe, where you get, there's no one around? What do you do?
Well, the good thing about it is we had a good run up to when things got really tough. Cycling through Europe, we did about 4,200 kilometers towards Istanbul, which took us 2 months and a bit. And in Europe, everything went wrong in terms of the bikes, as you'd expect in the first big trip. But there's a bike shop on every corner. Language isn't really an issue. Many people use a euro, so it was all very easy to kind of fix. We passed through Germany, and many of the German bike shops thought we were absolutely nuts. We didn't know how to change a flat tire. They thought we'd never make it. So we had that run up into Istanbul. And then after Istanbul, things did get tough, but we had that experience, so we could think on our feet. And when the expedition took on a bit more of a survivalist, like an element in the deserts and the mountains, then we at least had that grounding, that knowledge.
I mean, let's talk about the tough parts that ramped up. What about the deserts? I mean, tell us, you know, it's either blazingly hot or so unbelievably cold. How did you deal with that? On a bike, there's no air conditioning, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so we crossed two deserts, actually. The Kyzylkum Desert of Uzbekistan and the Taklamakan Desert in China, West China. It wasn't hot, I can tell you that. they're called cold winter deserts.
Right.
We found out the hard way, to the point where everything was frozen, water was frozen, Coke was frozen, bananas, apples, our beards were frozen. So it was a pretty cold experience. The first one was scrubland desert, no sand in the Kyzylkum really. But then when we went to the Taklamakan, it was more, sand dunes. We attempted to cross the desert in, 2 days from north to south to try and make a world record attempt crossing. And so we aimed to do 559 kilometres in 48 hours.
With no prior training, really. Just, oh, we'll break a world record, shall we?
With no planning, really.
Yeah. It's like, that sounds like something we could do.
Yeah. Well, again, we had that warm-up. So we did, we entered into Xinjiang province, and we thought, right, we're going to get through the desert quickly. We had that experience of the Kyzylkum desert in Uzbekistan. We thought, right, the quicker we get through the deserts, the better. Why not try and set a world record while we do it? So we had a kind of 800-kilometer warm-up to go left to right along the desert, and then we decided to cross it, and which we managed to do. That was the two longest days on the saddle.
Mm. We cycled 301 kilometers on the first day and about 19 hours on the saddle, leaving at 4:30 a.m., arriving at 1 a.m., slept in the desert for 4 hours in minus 35 degrees, shivering in Arctic sleeping bags. Tent froze above our mouths while we were breathing. And it was pretty awful.
It's one of those moments when you wake up and you think you haven't slept.
It's been a minute. You've closed your eyes and it's open.
Yeah, we both woke up in the fetal position, hugging our knees, trying to survive, basically.
So, I mean, it's easy for me to say this sitting in a radio studio in Hong Kong, and maybe it's someone listening that, you know, they're at work eating their lunch or they're at home in their living room. It's very easy to say, oh, I could do that. That sounds very exciting. But were you ever scared during the trip? I mean, it is quite a daunting task. Was there any fear going through these deserts saying, what if something goes wrong? What are we going to do?
There was only fear, I think, when we weren't together. There were a couple of moments when you had to separate. And that was the kind of times when it got dodgy, because when there are two of you, we took it in turns to be ill, basically. It worked out quite well. So when I was really ill and could barely stay vertical, kind of leaning on my bike and really, really sick, Lawrence took care of me. When Lawrence got altitude sickness and had some issues with his hands and feet and his circulation, I tried to take care of him, and luckily it never happened at the same time. But there were a couple of moments when we had to be separate and cycle individually. That's when, if things start to go wrong, you're on your own, basically. We had a GPS sat phone and a first aid kit, but I remember cycling up one of the passes in the Pamirs, and the weather closed in. And so it was a massive whiteout. I couldn't see anything in front of me. And I was on my own. Not great planning, that one. And I thought, well, it's all very well having a first aid kit, but if I fall off and I'm unconscious, I can't apply the first aid kit.
That Band-Aid isn't really going to help, is it? So there is a great sense of brotherhood. You guys sort of, you know, became brothers during this big trip, obviously.
Yeah, well, we went to university together. So we've been together for 4 years through university in England and also in China for a year. We lived just around the corner from each other in China and basically across the road in England. So we'd spend a lot of time together, especially in the final year when we chose the same modules.
Oh, so you're probably sick of each other by now after
Well, a lot of people say that. What's it like waking up to the same next to the same person for 9 months? It's like being married, basically, except to a guy.
And maybe worse, though, because if you're married, at least you get to go and do your day job, hopefully, away from your wife, away from your husband, right? Here we were literally, I think, within 5 meters, 10 meters of each other all the time. If you're sleeping next to one another, waking up in the tent, or you're cycling next to him, or behind him, or in front of him, you know, there was really, you're only on your own when you're asleep. Not even when you're on the loo, because there were no loos in the desert. We just went by the
side. Someone has to keep watch, right? Yeah. Someone has to watch the bikes. We're gonna head to a song. This is immense talk I'm having. We're gonna cut to another song. This is Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. Talk us through this song. Was this the inspirational song during the trip?
When we said we had to get diverted because we couldn't take the boat to Turkmenistan, we had to take a boat south to north. So we claim it's not cheating because it went the wrong way.
Yeah, right. You didn't gain any ground.
We didn't gain any ground at all. It actually meant we added over 1,000 kilometres. But on the ferry, there was nothing to do. So we decided we'd shoot a music video. This is the song that we used on the ferry. We've not quite yet compiled the video, but this is the backing track that we dance to.
If you're in a bad mood, this is surely going to make it better.
Wait, here it is, Walking on Sunshine. We'll be back with more Nick and Lawrence on the 1-2-3 show. Stay tuned.